headlines this hour. The Palestinian president slams Israel for committing war crimes in Gaza as the death toll from the Israeli strikes against the territory rises to over 220. Palestinian resistance groups launch fresh rocket attacks on Israel, retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught at the Gaza Strip. Also coming up, Israeli forces killed two more Palestinians in the West Bank amid growing anger in the occupied territory at Israeli strikes on Gaza. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mews. Thanks for joining us. The Palestinian president has slammed Israel for carrying out what he calls organized state terrorism and war crimes in Gaza.
What the occupation is doing in Gaza, including vicious attacks on civilians, deliberate shelling of residential areas and institutions, destruction of infrastructure, as well as the killing of women, elderly, and children, is organized state terrorism carried out by the Israeli occupation and war crimes punishable by international law. We won't spare any efforts to bring those responsible in front of international courts.
Mahmoud Abbas made the comments after Palestinian Foreign Minister Riyad al-Maliki urged the International Criminal Court to investigate Israeli war crimes. The ICC is already carrying out investigations into the regime's atrocities during an earlier war on Gaza. Over 2,100 Palestinians were killed in the 7 weeks of Israeli aggression in 2014. Israeli warplanes and tanks have conducted new strikes on the Gaza Strip on the 10th day of the regime's aggression against the besieged territory. Several locations across the besieged territory, including Gaza City, Khan Yunis, and Jabalia, were targeted again today. At least four more Palestinians, including a journalist, lost their lives. That brings to 225 the number of Gazans killed since Israel started pounding Gaza last Monday. Nearly half of the victims are women and children. So far, over 1,500 Palestinians have also been injured and more than 52,000 displaced. The Israeli Prime Minister has said the regime has no time frame for ending its onslaught against the sliver. Benjamin Netanyahu also said that Tel Aviv, quote, does not rule out anything. International humanitarian organizations have highlighted the devastation caused by over a week of Israeli airstrikes and shelling on the Gaza Strip. A UK-based charity, Save the Children, says 50 schools have been damaged in Israeli attacks on the besieged territory. It says that nearly around 42,000 Palestinian children have also been impacted by the bombing. The organization called on Israel to adhere to international humanitarian law to protect the children. Earlier, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees also said that tens of thousands of Palestinians have been forced to take shelter in schools due to Israeli airstrikes. The agency also appealed to the international community for $37 million in immediate assistance. On Tuesday, Israel opened a single border crossing, allowing some fuel trucks into Gaza, but food convoys were unable to reach there. Palestinian resistance groups have launched fresh attacks on Israel in retaliation for the regime's deadly onslaught on the Gaza Strip. The Al-Qassam brigades have fired mortar shells at near Oz settlement in Eshkol region, southern Israel. The group also fired rockets into Eshkol, where Israeli media reported casualties without specifying. Rocket sirens also sounded in Zikim and Net Hasara settlements, as well as the city of Ashkelon. In the past days, Palestinian resistance groups have also conducted rocket attacks on Tel Aviv. The groups have promised more attacks if Israel does not stop its airstrikes on Gaza. A dozen Israelis have so far been killed in the Palestinian retaliatory attacks. Ashraf Shannon is our correspondent joining us from Gaza City. Ashraf, what do you have for us?
Yes, Israel continues to pound the Gaza Strip. Just minutes ago, less than a minute ago, actually, Israeli fighter jets fired at least three rockets to the north of the enclave, possibly killing more Palestinians and maiming more Palestinians, destroying more infrastructure, homes, buildings, anything you can think of. The Israeli regime has been bombing and destroying for the 2 billion inhabitants of Gaza. I can still hear loud explosions from the Mediterranean, with the Israeli gunboats hitting the coastal area of the Gaza Strip. That destroyed at least a dozen cafeterias that people in the summer used to go to for no reason. Right now, we're standing in front of one of the buildings that was bombed a few days ago, less than 2 days ago, and the extent of that damage that Israel's Israeli fighter jets have been using bunker buster smart bombs to cause as much havoc, as much destruction as possible. This is just one building. This is the front of the building. If we go to the back of that building, at least a dozen homes are not inhabitable anymore. Are not habitable anymore because of what Israel has done over the last 10 days. This is just one out of hundreds. The UN was saying 450, but actually the number is over 600. I mean, we're talking about full destruction, but partial destruction, when they talk about partial destruction, they are only, they're not counting that those homes that were partially destroyed. People cannot go back there because they're afraid of UXOs, unexploded ordnance that have killed many Palestinians after Israeli wars. And now the humanitarian situation is only getting worse day after day as the world keeps turning a blind eye to Israeli crimes because of the backing that the Israeli regime has been getting from all U.S. administration, including that of Joe Biden's.
And if you can tell us about the hospitals, how they're making out.
Hospitals, even before this onslaught, were struggling to deal with COVID-19, to deal with the hundreds of seriously injured people who were shot and wounded and in critical condition during the Great March of Return rallies when Israeli snipers were taking aim at innocent protesters, women, children, elderly people. They were shooting them like sitting ducks in the east of the enclave. And now with the COVID pandemic, 3 days ago, for 3 days now, the hospitals in Gaza cannot, the only laboratory in Gaza that tests for COVID-19 is not working anymore. So the hospitals, the Ministry of Health does not know how many cases were infected today or yesterday, or the day before. In addition, the International Committee of the Red Cross, the UN, and also the Ministry of Health, and local NGOs and international NGOs have warned of the dire conditions inside the hospitals and clinics because of lack of medicines, lack of surgical supplies, and also lack of electricity. Because no electricity, that means you cannot operate on wounded people.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Let's get Kent Stone in here, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton. Kent Stone, we're looking, and we just heard what has happened pretty much in terms of the devastation. You got infrastructure, you got hospitals, you got residential buildings that have been targeted. And just as of 2 days ago, we had our correspondent say that almost every city and town in the Gaza Strip has been hit. Of course, it's a very tiny enclave there. You roughly have 2 million people living in, about 300 kilometers, I'm not too sure, which is called the third densely populated area in the world. Why is Israel continuing its offensive, do you think?
Israel is continuing its illegal attacks on the Palestinians because it doesn't know what else to do. It is an apartheid state that has been put into place there by the United States of America in the Middle East, the oil-rich Middle East, and it is there to keep, to put down the Palestinian nation and all the surrounding nations of the Middle East, the Lebanese nation, the Syrian nation, the Iranian nation, and this is its job. It is a pit bull on a leash that the United States uses to keep countries in line. But I'll tell you something very important. This latest Israeli massacre on Gaza has shown that there's been a tectonic shift in world public opinion in favor of the Palestinian cause. And in Canada, this was reflected in big demonstrations from coast to coast in every major city on short notice, including here in the city of Hamilton, where we had the largest demonstration, pro-Palestinian demonstration ever, and we endorsed it, we supported it, we attended it. Canadians are incensed that the Canadian government, the Trudeau government, which has tools in its hand to punish Israel for its crimes is making mealy-mouthed statements of concern. The Canadian government and the and people know it on the street. The Canadian government has in its hands the tools such as cutting off military sales to Israel, such as ending or suspending the Canada Free Trade Agreement, such as ending or suspending the Canada-Israel security arrangement, such as ending the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund, which funds the illegal settlements in Palestine, and finally ending the illegal Israeli recruitment of Jewish Canadians into the IDF. So Trudeau has the tools, and he's not using them. Canadians are incensed, and people across the world are angry at their governments for not taking action after all these decades of oppression and occupation.
You know, we've heard this statement before, and pardon me for addressing this question this way, but, you know, I'm trying to really understand, engage what you have said, along with many other analysts at this point. You termed it as a tectonic shift when it comes to the issue of Palestine. We've heard other people also say that this time is different. This time we're seeing an Israel, for example, that has been weakened. We've seen the rockets actually make their statements. And come to think of it, I'd like to get your reaction on this particular statement that came from Hamas, because I think it's rather important. And what it has said, the Hamas spokesperson, is this is in response to the U.S. President Joe Biden asking for a de-escalation call. Hamas has said Israel needs to end its aggression in Jerusalem and its bombardment of Gaza. Once that happens, there can be room to talk about arrangements to restore calm. You can see that the issue of Jerusalem is top of the list here for Hamas, because that then opens the door for all these other core issues that have not been resolved. Are we really looking at this tectonic shift, as you termed it?
I believe so. I've been involved in Palestine solidarity for 50 years, and I have never seen world public opinion so much in favor of the Palestinian cause as today. I think that after the general strike that took place in Palestine yesterday, people around the world realize that those artificial borders created to keep the Palestinians apart have no meaning to the Palestinians, and people see that the apartheid Israeli state is on its last legs and is approaching the end of its life. People know that the two-state solution that was a fraud and a ploy, it's dead. And people realize that we are on the cusp of a new possibility, a one democratic state in all of historic Palestine. So the fact that there was a general strike, that Hamas is shooting many rockets into Israel, that the Israelis have evacuated the north of its colonies in the north of Palestine because they are afraid that Hezbollah might join the cause. We know that the situation has changed and there are new possibilities, and that's why there's a tectonic shift in world public opinion in favor of the Palestinian cause.
Okay, let's go with this notion of tectonic shift, and to use your words. One particular analyst said that just like apartheid South Africa, when there's a momentum where large numbers of countries begin to change their views on Israel and become anti-Israeli because of the fact that it's an apartheid regime, and it has done what it has done along with what has occurred in the past 10 days, which is the bombardment of the Gaza Strip, that's going to lead to the unraveling of this regime, just like it did with South Africa, something that the U.S. won't be able to prevent because that's its strongest ally. Do you see a similarity there, and for that to actually maybe something that may happen to the current Israel?
Yes, I was involved in the BDS campaign, which helped to overthrow the white apartheid rule in South Africa during the 1980s. And I can see today that BDS is having an effect on the apartheid regime in Israel as well. Countries around the world took action individually and at the United Nations in the 1980s to isolate and punish the apartheid regime in South Africa. I should point out that at that time, South Africa had one ally, clandestine covert ally in the world, and that was the State of Israel. And the State of Israel continued to sell arms to the apartheid regime in South Africa. Moreover, goods that were banned in other countries from apartheid South Africa were transshipped to Israel. And labels were put on saying product of Israel, and they were shipped out of Israel to the rest of the world. So Israel was an apartheid supporter when South Africa was under attack, the apartheid regime was under attack, and Israel has now shown itself to the rest of the world to be an apartheid regime, which calls itself a Jewish state, which only gives rights, certain rights, privileged rights to Jewish Israelis at the expense of all of its other citizens who are Palestinians of Arab, of Christian or Muslim background, and people who've immigrated or come as refugees.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it, Kent Stone. Kent Stone there, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War from Hamilton, Ontario. Thank you. Israeli forces have killed two more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank as people continue to protest the regime's deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. Footage shows Israeli forces fatally shooting a Palestinian woman in Al-Khalil or Hebron over the alleged knife attack. This was the second Israeli killing there today. Separately, a Palestinian teenager was also killed in the city of Al-Fam, northwest of Jenin. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the city of Ramallah have laid to rest three people killed during protests there. Tensions are running high in the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem Al-Quds amid the deadly Israeli crackdown on Palestinians protesting against Israeli crimes. Over two dozen people have been killed in the occupied territory so far. The chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says the Israeli regime has suffered massive blows in its offensive against the Palestinians. Major General Hossein Salami said that Israel's aggression against Palestinians is doomed to fail. He said that any party standing by Israel will face a similar fate. Salami noted that a new Palestine has emerged as a missile-equipped nation and that Tehran will keep supporting the Palestinians' fight against Israel. He was addressing protesters who had gathered in Tehran's Imam Hussein Square to condemn the Israeli onslaught on the Gaza Strip. Demonstrators holding Palestinian flags expressed solidarity with the Palestinians. Anti-Israeli protests have been held in many countries since the regime launched its deadly aggression against the Palestinians. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat, or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In a move that was condemned by environmental justice advocates, President Joe Biden's administration has sent 500 unaccompanied asylum-seeking minors to Fort Bliss, a highly contaminated and potentially hazardous military base in El Paso, Texas, and is reportedly considering using additional toxic military sites as detention centers for migrant children in U.S. custody. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kenny Stancil Ryder. This article is published under the heading, As Biden Ramps Up Detention Capacity, Group Warns Contaminated Military Bases Are No Place for Kids. Here's the details. In a move that was condemned by environmental justice advocates recently, President Joe Biden's administration recently sent 500 unaccompanied asylum-seeking minors to Fort Bliss, a highly contaminated and potentially hazardous military base in El Paso, Texas, and is reportedly considering using additional toxic military sites as detention centers for migrant children in U.S. custody. We are extremely concerned to hear of plans to detain immigrant children in Fort Bliss. Military bases filled with contaminated sites are no place for the healthy development of any child, Melissa Legg, an attorney at Earth Justice, said in a statement. We recognize that the humanitarian situation at the border needs to be addressed in humanity, compassion, and expediency, Legg continued. Part of that requires keeping children away from toxic military sites. While we are hopeful that the Biden administration will keep children safe, we remain vigilant and ready to continue protecting detained minors in toxic facilities, she added. Immigrant children under the care of the federal government should not be in cages, let alone toxic sites in military bases. The Biden administration has recently announced that facilities at Fort Bliss would serve as temporary housing for up to 5,000 unaccompanied minors, the El Paso Times reported recently. The Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, said it will reserve the Fort Bliss accommodations for boys ages 13 to 17. Military personnel won't staff the site or provide care for the children who are in the custody and care of HHS. There are 17,641 unaccompanied asylum-seeking minors in U.S. custody as of Tuesday, according to ABC News. Over 5,600 children are being held in overcrowded facilities run by Customs and Border Protection, CBP, which falls under the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, while more than 12,000 are under the supervision of HHS. Although DHS is supposed to transfer minors to HHS's Office of refugee resettlements within 72 hours, after which children are housed in one of more than 200 HHS-approved shelters in 22 states until they can be placed with a family member or another suitable sponsor. Thousands have been stuck for far longer than legally allowed in squalid conditions. Recently, the White House came under fire for restricting media access to CBP's detention facilities, which some journalists have described as border jails. As the El Paso Times noted, HHS characterized Fort Bliss as an emergency intake site and a temporary measure to quickly remove the children from the custody of the Border Patrol. Earth Justice argues that the Biden administration's plan to use military bases, many of which the group says are known to be riddled with toxic hazards from past military operations, spills, storage of toxic medicals, unexploded ordnances, and firing ranges to expand its capacity to temporarily detain unaccompanied children is no solution. According to Earth Justice, 130 military bases and installations are considered priority Superfund sites by the Environmental Protection Agency. There are currently 651 Department of Defense and National Guard sites potentially contaminated by toxic chemicals known as PFAS, short for per- and polyfluoroacyl substances. PFAS don't easily break down, and they can persist in your body and in the environment for decades. Several of the military sites being considered by the Biden administration are contaminated with potentially hazardous pollutants, and some are even located on or near Superfund sites, Earth Justice said. The organization continued, Superfund sites under consideration for housing children in immigration custody include the Homestead Detention Facility in Homestead, Florida, Moffett Field in Mountain View, California, and Joint Base San Antonio in Texas. Many of the sites remain inadequately remediated and still contaminated. Without proper environmental reviews, there is no way to guarantee these sites are safe for children, potentially exposing them to toxic chemicals that could have lifelong health impacts. Fort Bliss is no exception. Earth Justice, along with partners including Alizna Nakola do Campesias and the National Hispanic Medical Association, released hundreds of documents of searchable documents and an expert analysis of previous plans for construction of a temporary detention center for children and families at Fort Bliss. These records document several problems with the project, including that the Army did not adequately investigate to determine what types of waste had been disposed of at the site, that the methods used for testing the soil samples were inadequate or never completed, and that samples taken after the supposed cleanup still had concerning levels of pollution. Additionally, illegal dumping on the site may continue to this day. As a result, there is now even greater uncertainty about the environmental hazards at the site and a greater need for thorough testing, analysis, and cleanup. We are deeply concerned about the decision to open temporary detention facilities for minors at Fort Bliss and the potential health risks to the minors detained in 10th there, said Dr. Elena Reyes, president of the National Hispanic Medical Association, a client in Earth Justice 2018 FOIA lawsuit regarding the base. Based on what we found in our Fort Bliss investigation in 2018, she added, there are still present toxins from past landfills, which means children could be forcibly exposed to toxicity linked to cancer and development defects. Despite the GOP's dehumanizing and misleading narrative that a border crisis is afoot, there has not been an uncharacteristic surge in migrants entering the U.S. at the southern border, but rather a predictable bump in border crossings that typically happens at this time of year, augmented by the arrival of people who would have come in 2020 but could not due to the clampdown on immigration during the COVID-19 pandemic, as the Washington Post reported recently. An HHS statement on the transfer of migrant children to the military base in El Paso said that the use of the Fort Bliss facility will have no impact on the Department of Defense's ability to conduct its primary mission or on military readiness. The deference to militarism is telling. According to Representative Jamal Bowman and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, it is impossible to understand the arrival of asylum seekers at a U.S.-Mexico border without taking into account the role played by U.S. imperialism. As Common Dreams reported recently, the two progressive lawmakers made the case that the root causes of migration from Central America and Mexico to the U.S. can be found in decades of interventionist foreign policy, profit-maximizing trade and carceral policies, and the climate crisis, all driven by the pursuit of capitalist class interest. Citing the U.S. government's flagrant disregard for the health of those in custody, as justice called for the immediate halt of any plans to place children in such unsafe facilities, the securing of safe and suitable housing for children while they are required to remain in the care of the Department of Health and Human Services, and the development of solutions that do not involve placing children on or near toxic sites, military sites, or in detention-like settings.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
inside Israel.
While economic and health experts in Israel weigh in daily on how to save the Israelis medically and financially, there is little talk regarding a consequence of the virus that could cause the most damage, mental health. Over 1.2 million Israeli adults reported deterioration in mental and emotional state, but that figure was for the first lockdown. Now, researchers report a 40% increase in that number for a total of 1,680,000.
The first is social distancing and the quarantine. Many people are alone now, and alone for long periods of time and isolated. Depression and anxiety, we've been seeing a lot of these people getting worse, and also people without pre-existing issues. It's just a problem.
The issue of mental disorders in Israel is not new. Unfortunately, it was never properly addressed by authorities, as no funds were allocated to it. And now, with the current political chaos and budget deadlock, it seems highly unlikely that the regime would pay attention to this problem.
People are out of jobs, people don't have enough money.
Even in the military, Israelis who are drafted there fake mental health disorders just to go AWOL from the military. We are talking about one-third of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. Mati Kaspi, one of Israel's leading musicians, posted a message on his Facebook page announcing that he and his family were leaving Israel in order to protect their mental health. He blames the Israeli regime for what he called the sad situation the regime creates for its citizens and culture. Mental health experts are warning of another epidemic in Israel. They say that the emotional and psychological impact of the coronavirus pandemic are no less severe than the havoc wreaked on Israel's health system and the economy. Psychologist Eled Mardo of Haifa University, who is behind the study, reports a 300% increase in requests for psychological treatment. The data shows that 25% of Israelis over the age of 21, that is approximately 1.2 million people, report a deterioration in their mental and emotional state after the first lockdown. This, while 26% say the emotional state of their children has taken a turn for the worse. According to the professor behind the study, these are catastrophic numbers. The issue of mental health in Israel is not new. It has always been a social issue that the regime never really found a cure for. Israelis do not seek help because there are few problems. Many people do not seek out mental health services. Mental health services cost money, and as people feel the extended economic strain, mental health support is often viewed as non-essential. About 87% of Israelis with mental health issues stated that they simply could not afford to seek help for their mental health, according to a report published by the American Psychological Association. Due to almost non-existent programs amidst the political chaos and budget deadlock, there is no support for the unemployed to relieve the most severe economic distress. Steps to address the mental health issues in Israel are not being taken so correctly. Researchers point out to the lack of educational campaigns among Israelis regarding identification of mental health problems and appropriate use of mental health services offered by the health plans. Israelis are unaware of what is available.
First of all, a lot of doctors that could provide some kind of assistance or first diagnosis, family doctors, general physicians, were not available at that time. And for a while, you couldn't reach the mental health clinics. And there was a big confusion at the beginning why you couldn't reach psychologists and mental health workers. That was one source. People were locked down at home. And that caused both social isolation and a lot of anxiety among people. People didn't know what was going on. In addition, bear in mind that people people were detached from and disconnected from their communities, from their schools, from their everyday life. And all that caused a lot of stress and a lot of times depression as well. So that could explain some rise in mental health states. So at the beginning, we saw the Prime Minister showing up in himself, in person, showing up in prime time and addressing the nation. But the way he addressed it, I believe, caused more panic. He wanted to make sure that people take care of themselves, maintain social distance, maintain hygiene, wear masks, although at the beginning people say it's not helpful at all, and then suddenly became helpful. As time went by, people expressed more anxiety, I believe, due to those conferences, the daily conferences. You felt that things are changing constantly, that the decision makers often are not sure about how to handle this issue. They were learning the issue themselves. And the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. It was not an issue at all. People were worried about physical health and breaking the chains of contagion. And so the issue of mental health was not addressed at all. You know, and some we had some leaders saying also, you know, that just go out and have fun, don't worry about it. This issue was not considered at all until it was a huge pressure from public services, psychological public services, that started stressing that the issue of mental health and mental wellness will be addressed as well. This issue was not handled at all.
On social media, here's what users said. Norian said, little is known about the Israeli Jews suffering in Israel under their right-wing regime, children being taken from parents. An estimated 200 fathers a year have killed themselves. I heard this in a podcast from an Israeli activist. There is much poverty. All people deserve humanity. Yossi Bernstein says, she bets more women will suffer from domestic violence than the virus. Priya says, world's first psychiatric corona ward has opened in Israel. I had predicted this would happen. Corona will eventually go away, but people need to keep their minds sane. It's a mental challenge for the world.
There is great political instability in Israel right now. And the coronavirus is being used as a political tool, for instance, to shut down demonstrations in front of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home. The politicization of this COVID crisis is causing great anxiety among Israeli people, and Israeli people have good cause to question the actions of their government, even the legitimacy of their government.
The issue of mental disorders is prevalent in the Israeli military as well. In fact, 1/3 of the Israeli males and 44% of females avoid being drafted into the military for mental health reasons. To avoid the mandatory service, Israelis rely on a military law that allows recruits to receive an exemption on grounds of medical or health issues. According to Israeli law, any individual whose health standards is less than 21 points is exempted from the military service. Some pretend to be suffering from poor mental health or disability to score low grades, an act seen as extremely dangerous by Israeli authorities. The mental health crisis in Israel is impacting all sectors and parts parts of Israeli society. An Israeli crisis hotline says it is receiving an unprecedented level of suicidal calls, and many of them are from people who did not have any previous diagnosed mental health issues before the pandemic started. According to the nonprofit organization that is supported by the health ministry, Iran, since the onset of the coronavirus crisis, some 5,500 Israelis who are considering ending their lives have made contact. According to Iran, it took 240,000 emergency calls since the pandemic started. About 60% of these calls are about dealing with daily challenges, financial and employment problems, mental health, and identity crises. The organization stated that 86% of inquiries come from people in crisis, or what it called emotional overload. So far, according to the organization, there is no end to these numbers in sight.
Well, in recent years, we've seen reports that there is an increase in Israeli youngsters trying to avoid drafting by reporting all kinds of mental health and other issues. About half of them, about 44% of them, were ultra-Orthodox, what we call Haredim, and about and size, pretty much the same number, about 46%, were secular. In some groups in Israeli society, it became unfashionable to go to the military. I don't think it's necessarily a result of mental health problems among young people, partly, which I'll discuss in a minute, but also that it became not such a problem, not such a stigma in Israel, not serving in the army, because it just doesn't fit me anymore and I'm not too crazy about military service and it's going to take 2 or 3 years of my life. I believe that having policies that change constantly, that are clearly affected by political issues, and decisions are not based on professional expert opinions, are very difficult to digest and to be accepted. When you see that the entire country is in lockdown, while actually only certain cities are red cities, because of a high percentage of sick people, but the entire country goes into lockdown because certain groups oppose closing down just those cities, you understand that there's little professional advice involved in this issue. And therefore, the trust in one's government, in policymakers, in decision makers, in high-ranking officials, has deteriorated dramatically. And therefore, you don't know whom to believe. When different ministries are fighting with each other, Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Treasury.
On social media, here's what users said. Medusa is done, says she's sick of war and the endless glorification of war and military violence. In Israel, so many kids are gung-ho about going into combat units and end up with PTSD and massive mental health issues for the rest of their lives. But no one talks about that. Marwa says, how about Israel pays reparations for the mental health of Lebanese who endured its terrorism and still do down south? Jonathan says, if Israel cared about the mental health of its soldiers, it would stop making them be an occupying force that denies the humanity of other people.
Some people don't agree with the service in the army, but it's a tiny, tiny minority. There is a minority of people who do not want to serve in the army for religious reasons. But there is a small, tiny minority of people who feel that they cannot serve in the Israeli army for various reasons. Some of them might be political, but it's a tiny minority. You have to understand that the people usually serve in the Israeli army willingly and not so much under duress. However, there is a small minority, a very small number, less than 1% or even less than that, who might opt for a release from the army under some kind of mental health suggestion. But this is a tiny, tiny group of people.
Researchers warn that the problem of mental health will persist with or without coronavirus because of the lack of innovative interventions. People, according to experts, need to receive appropriate mental health services, but it is almost impossible due to the limitations related to the economic, social, and technological barriers. The health ministry and the regime are not reaching out by the technology available to Israelis for their mental health care. Given Israel's multi-ethnic society, information is not communicated in a linguistically and culturally appropriate manner, researchers found. This means that the regime and bureaucracy are not using the language used by many Israelis to communicate with them. It only uses the official Hebrew language. Also, religious leaders and organizations play a prominent role in Israeli society and serve as trusted sources of mental health information and referrals. Technically, there are no too limited efforts being made to facilitate the religious and mental health care sectors working more closely together. This leaves the average Israeli citizen with mental health problems wondering how they can seek help in a helpless society.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.